Somebody order Mexican.
As a matter of fact, we did. Thank you for asking, Sir Gustavo Arellano, ladies and gentlemen, in the studio of the world-famous K-Rock. He is the author of Ask a Mexican newspaper column, now out as a book, too, through Amazon.com. Or where are you? In all the bookstores, too? Wherever?
Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon, everywhere in the United States.
It's a funny book. I've read a lot of it, and it's very funny. And some of it's informative, but a lot of it's very tongue-in-cheek and funny.
Thank you.
Now, Gustavo, I told you this off the air, but it bears repeating on. Our listeners have been demanding that we have you on as a guest. I guess you got a lot of fans from your column that's read in the Orange County Weekly. And people really respond to what it is you have to say. How do you describe Ask a Mexican to people who have never read it before?
Ask a Mexican is exactly how it sounds. I'll answer any and all questions about Mexicans. They could be racist, sexist, informative, about dwarves, whatever you want. I'll answer it.
Now, that's a good place to start, because one of the questions in your book is, why do Mexicans seem to love dwarves so much?
They do. The reason is because in the pre-Hispanic cultures of the Aztecs and the Olmecs, the dwarves, they were considered rain gods, and so they were worshipped in a way. So, of course, the past is ever present for Mexicans, so that reveration for dwarves now manifests itself by putting dwarves on television and allowing them to chase big-bosomed women all over the screen.
And that's really, that's the best TV out there.
Isn't it?
What's better than dwarves chasing big-busted women around?
It's lovely.
Hey, where did the guy dressed up in the bee costume start, Gustavo?
That's El Chapulín Colorado, the red grasshopper, and he was this character by a guy who called himself Chespirito, Little Shakespeare, so it would be a comedy show, and that's how he ended up with a, you know, red suit and the little antenna, and it still comes out on television. Of course, Matt Groening cites El Chapulín directly as inspiration for Bumblebee Man.
Yep,
every Mexican in the United States knows who this guy is, and even Gabachos for that matter.
Do you get people who complain that you try to speak for an entire race and they don't, you're not speaking for me?
Oh, absolutely. You have, I can't say it on the air, but I call them a certain thing, PC something or other. But no, you get people say, oh, who appointed you the Mexican? And I tell them, no one appointed me the Mexican. I'm just answering these questions. You can answer them as well. Of course, you're going to have to deal with a lot of racism. You're going to have to try to be funny and intellectual at the same time and do it week after week after week. Most people can't do that offer.
By the way, and without getting bitter about it, that's the difficult part, because you do get a lot of crap. You know?
Oh my gosh, I get so much hate mail all the time, and a lot of people, the tendency is to cry and weep and moan about it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather debunk the stereotypes that they're trying to prove to me and have a lot of fun with it. So a lot of times if people send me like really bad things, I'll say, oh, thank you for being my fan.
Yes.
Yeah,
and they are. Nothing makes it more angry. By the way, we've learned this too. Your email was very funny. That's a good one.
Just write that back to them.
No matter what they're saying, it angers them.
Yeah. Gustavo, why the Dodgers and why the Raiders? How did those teams become so immensely popular with American Hispanics?
The same reason why K-Rock is so popular amongst Latinos in Southern California. During the 80s, a lot of Latinos came of age. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they listened to K-Rock. That's why they love Morrissey, the Smiths, and all that stuff. And at the time, during the 80s, of course, the Dodgers, the Lakers, and the Raiders, they were winners. They were winning like crazy. Nowadays, of course, the Raiders are just terrible, but Latinos or Mexicans specifically are as big a bunch of front runners as white people can be. So, of course, you're going to like them. That's why you don't have so many people liking the Angels, because during the 80s, the Angels really weren't that good.
But they're good now.
They're good now. So now you have the latest generation of people now liking the Angels. But the Dodgers, at the same time, they kind of tanked for a little bit, but now they're better, especially now with Nomar Garciaparra.
Right.
You have a self-raised beaner from Southern California now playing for the home team. Everyone's going to love him.
Who's Psycho Mike, wants to play on his home team as well.
Yeah. He certainly does.
Speaking of K-Rock, what do Mexicans think of Beck? He smokes a lot of weed and says a lot of gibberish in Spanish. You'd think they'd like him.
We don't like him because...
That's one of the questions in the book.
Yeah, his album Güero, he forgot the umlaut on top of it, the two dots on top of the U, so it's a mispronunciation. And he had a chance to tell the world that Mexicans really, well, we call white people güeros, but the more popular term is gabacho. Mm-hmm. So he had a chance, and he blew it.
So he didn't name his album Gabacho, so that's why he don't like
that's
him?
That's why I don't like
Dude.
Him.
That's pretty rough.
You have to
now,
be.
Is it considered, should I be insulted if somebody calls me a gabacho?
It's the same term as a gringo, except it has a little bit more of an edge. Really, Mexicans use it because most gringos don't know the term gabacho, so that's just another way to...
Right.
Referenced to the gabacho without them knowing it.
I gotcha. What is your background, Gustavo? You were born in the United States or born in Mexico?
No, I was born in Anaheim. Both of my parents were immigrants. My mom was a legal immigrant. My dad was an illegal immigrant. He came to this country in the trunk of a Chevy in 1968, along with three other men. The way my dad tells it, each of the men paid two San Clemente hippie girls $50 apiece to drive them all the way from Tijuana to Chinatown here in L.A.
And, oh, long
and
way.
Is he still illegal, and can we turn him in?
No. He was deported a couple of times, and he jumped the border immediately. He's now a citizen, and in the great American tale of assimilation, now he thinks the latest batch of Mexicans are ruining this country.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the former illegal immigrant.
I'm half Mexican myself, but I just don't understand. Why do Mexicans wear their clothes when swimming? Another one of the questions in your book.
The most asked question, actually, in Ask a Mexican history.
Really?
Of course, because it started here in Orange County, and it's still very popular in Southern California, and so everyone goes to the ocean. And the reason is that a lot of Mexicans, like a lot of white people, they're fat.
Right.
And so Mexicans are going to be more modest about it. We don't want to insult our neighbors with our rolls of fat, while gabachos, on the other hand, they're proud of the rolls.
Yeah, they're fine insulting and looking bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not good.
How much time do you go back to Mexico at all? Do you ever spend any more time there?
Not really, because basically we have Mexico here in the United States now.
That's true.
Even growing up, my first language was Spanish. All the people that I grew up with, they all came from the same village that my mom came. What you've seen in the past 30 years with Mexican immigration, you've seen a hemorrhaging of villages to the United States where they reestablished their life. At the same time, though, you have the children, such as myself, being, you know, having one foot in the Mexican society, but also fully acculturating into this country.
I guess my question for you, and you probably hear this all the time on a serious note, is why have so many Mexicans given up on improving their home country?
You know, it's funny that people say that, because it's a double standard. Well, two-part question. Number one, Mexicans are improving their country. They come here, they make billions of dollars, and they send it back to Mexico, and that's where they build the roads, because the Mexican government is completely inefficient. But yet, people never ask the same question about previous waves of immigrants. It's understood in previous waves of immigration that they came to this country to stay and to make better lives for themselves. But because it's always Mexicans, and the American mind has always had this question mark about Mexicans, that's why there's always questions about Mexicans. There's always this doubt about what they're going to do to this country or whether they might even ruin it.
Here's another question from your book. Why do Mexicans pronounce shower as chower, but chicken as chicken?
It's etymology. In Castilian Spanish, there's not a SH sound. It's all hard CHs.
Right.
So, you know, obviously Mexicans speak Spanish, so they're going to be pronouncing that word. However, that sound is a part of a lot of indigenous languages in Mexico. You know, not a lot of people in Mexico, they don't even speak Spanish. They speak Indian languages. So if anyone pronounces their CHs as a SH, then they're probably of Indian descent.
Okay. Our friend Rudy from Boyle Heights on the phone. Good morning, Rudy.
Hey, what's up, eh, Gustavo?
Hey, ¿qué onda?
What's up, ese?
Nothing much, man. Pure anacrime, ese.
Hey, man, how come I got so many kids?
That's your question, Rudy?
My Uncle Creeper said, like, if you smoke enough Yesca, like, you can't, like, make no babies, right? But,
yeah.
Like, I smoke crazy weed. I said, like, crazy weed. And, like, yeah, like, I got mad kids, man. And, like, sad girl's pregnant again. I don't know what to say.
Oh, not God. Again.
Let me tell you what's up with that. I could give you an anthropological response and say that poor people have a lot of kids because they need to have more people that could make money for them.
Because they die also.
Exactly.
Many of their children die.
I could give you a theological response and say that Mexican Catholics don't believe in contraception, but let's get down to reality. There's no contraception in the world that could hold back Mexican sperm. It is by far the most powerful sperm on earth.
I'd like to say we have a little bit of something for everybody on today's program. Comedian Ari Shaffir will be joining us next hour. Great screenwriter Roman Coppola is going to be in studio in the 8 o'clock hour. And from The Walking Dead, he's Daryl, don't you know, actor Norman Reedus. That's all coming up this morning between now and 10 on K-Rock.
Walking Dead coming back this Sunday.
Yeah.
Very excited about that. We have too many animal stories. We put them on a wheel. It's called The Wheel of Bad Animal Voices. Here are the stories on the wheel that it might land on today.
All right.
The Brazilian wandering spider.
Okay.
Holly, the cat who walked 200 miles to get home.
Holly.
The Brazilian penis snake.
Yes.
Willie, the foul-mouthed cockatoo. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. He's been on here for too long.
Yeah.
Kansas stoner mice. Harvey Dent, the two-faced kitten. Thurston Howell the third from the rich cats of Instagram.
Where's Thurston Howell? How many times in a row are we going to spin this goddamn wheel?
Killer Asian tiger mosquitoes. Vicious British underground mice. Irwin, the formerly paralyzed kangaroo.
Who's going to die of old age, dude, if it doesn't land on him.
That's right. So let's get right into it, shall we?
It's time for the Wheel of Bad Animal Voices. Where do you think it's going to land?
Don't know.
It's going to be pretty bad, but Kevin and me don't care, so we'll do it anyway. It's time
Thurston Howell III. Come on, Person. Come on, Person. Come on, Person.
Good. Kansas stoner mice. Sorry, B.
Yeah!
Kansas stoner mice. Wichita police in Kansas are hot on the tail of mice that chewed through bags of marijuana kept in police storage facilities.
Well, sure, that makes sense. They would go for food like that, yeah.
Three packages were evidence seized during an arrest in 2009. So they had this weed in lockup, and it was evidence, and the mice said, hey, that smells good. I'm going to go have me some of that.
They apparently
nested in the pot and ate some of it, and the police lieutenant Doug Nolte said, quote, we've got some mice that are stoners.
Well, we asked producer Dave to find out more about this story. So I believe on the line we have the police station in Wichita, Kansas this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. Let's see who's there. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, we're calling about the stoner mice.
Yeah, man, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm really good.
Who are we speaking with today?
My name's Kyle.
Kyle.
Hi, Kyle. How are you doing?
Hi, man. How are you?
We're good.
You're on the phone.
We're not as good as you, but we're good. So
I can hear your voice through a box.
Right. Right. It's telephone.
That's crazy, man.
How much pot was there, Kyle?
Yeah, don't make him think, B.
Okay, a lot. Let's just say there's a lot of pot.
How many mice are there that are partaking?
Three.
Okay.
Three bags of pot.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. How many mice then is our follow up question?
Oh man.
Me.
How?
Right.
Dave. Carl.
Yeah, that's three.
Carl.
You already said Carl. Are there two Carls or?
What?
Did you count Carl twice or are there two Carls? I feel like we're off the topic here.
Hold on.
Three mice.
Me.
Don't worry about it.
Carl.
Doesn't matter.
Dave.
All right, that's three.
Alan.
Oh, Alan.
All right,
okay.
Four.
Clark.
Five.
Dave.
A different Dave or same Dave?
What?
Never mind. All right. So you guys burrow into the police station, basically. And then how excited were you when you realized all this marijuana was in the evidence locker?
We didn't even know what it was, man. It's like, hey, there's some stuff in there. Smells good. Maybe we can, like, make bedding out of it or something, you know?
Right.
And so we just started gnawing our way through like we do.
Right.
And, you know, we were starting to, you know, move it around and make a bed out of it. And then it's like, hey, let's try some of this. Maybe you can eat it, you know? And then next thing you know, man, Carl's like, look at me. And he's like dancing and stuff. And I'm like, Carl, what's up with you, man? He's like, this is the greatest food we've ever eaten, dude. And then Jane says, yeah, watch this. And he pulls out a bong. And I was like, what's that?
Where did Dave get a bong?
Well, it wasn't a bong. It was a pen cap.
Okay. They're mice, though.
He packed it, man. And he lit it up. And it was even better than eating it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You guys are having the time of your life. Now, aren't you starving, though, once you have all that pot? Doesn't that just make you hungry?
It does make us a little hungry, yeah. But luckily, there was they confiscated a carton of untaxed Cheetos.
Oh, is that right?
Also in the evidence room, man. So okay. We've just been flying through that stuff, man.
That's a party.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Now, according to the article, they called it an exterminator. So he apparently hasn't arrived yet.
Well, if he has, man, he's not a very good exterminator because yeah. We're still here.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Up.
Oh, there's a little pen cap now.
Wow, this is old weed, man.
Yeah, it's from 2009.
It's a little stale.
Yeah.
But mice can't be choosers. Know what I'm saying? That's the old saying.
Is that what the old saying is?
Hey, there's Carl. There's Dave. Right. Okay. Okay.
We gotta go. All right. We gotta go. Thank you.
Seven!
I'm not often watching Adult Swim at 4 a.m., but if I were last week and I came across too many cooks, I might think that I was on an acid trip.
Yeah, you would question your own sanity.
I start thinking about, and we have this up at the Kevin and Bean Facebook page if you want to see the video if you have not yet. But I just keep thinking about the people who are channel surfing at that time of night, and 4 a.m. is an ugly time of night. nobody wants to be awake if they don't have to be. A lot of people are just trying to go to sleep or come down from the night before. And imagine you're flipping around and you come across that thing. Imagine what you would think it was if you saw it for the first time with no context, no pre-warning.
Here's what I will tell you is that it's 11 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And the first time I watched it, I went, oh, okay, I understand this, about 4 minutes in. And then I got a message from Bing saying, do not quit halfway through. You must watch all the way to the end. And I realized that I had seen really just the setup.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Casper Kelly, the man who made it, describes it as an 80s sitcom fever dream. And that's what it looks like. It's filmed on what looks like videotape. It's a little bit grainy. And everybody kind of is wearing 80s clothes and 80s hairstyles until they're not. Until it ends up being animated. Until it ends up being a space movie. Until it ends up having a killer who starts decapitating people. until it starts to have talking puppets. It's really the craziest thing that's out there right now. Let's hear a little bit of Too Many Cooks, the theme song. And then we've got an expert on the phone that'll help us break it down.
It takes a lot to make a stew.
A pinch of salt and laughter too.
A scoop of kids to add the spice.
A dash of love to make it nice. And you got
too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
Too many cooks.
On like that for 11 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Well, our friend who knows about TV stuff is Matt Fowler. He is a writer for the TV channel at IGN.com, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hey, Matt, welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what do we think about Too Many Cooks?
Well, like Kevin was saying, you think you know what it's going to be about 3 minutes in, and then it takes all these different swerves almost to appease people's, you know, 3 minute attention span when it comes to internet videos.
Yeah.
And it keeps zigging and zagging. And the funny thing is, it seemed like Friday morning when this became a big hit because it aired at 4 a.m. just hours earlier. People sort of en masse decided, I'm going to commit to an 11 minute internet video. They really didn't want to work that morning.
Right.
So they all started watching this. And it's not like Adult Swim isn't known for making you feel like you're on acid.
Agreed.
You know,
right.
Early
that's half their shows, yeah.
Yeah. But this one just caught on, and I think it had to do with that initial hook of being really relatable to all the old sitcoms that people, you know, the 80s sitcoms, the TGIF lineup on ABC with all the familiar characters, and that sort of brought people in.
Yeah, they're all nice. They're all nice, and they're all clean. They all wear nice clothes, and they're introducing each character, and then they sit on the couch, and they take a photo, and you go, wow, this really is just an intro for an 80s show.
And you know, and it's called Too Many Cooks, and it's the Cook family, and there's a lot of them. It reminded me of, there was actually that old Growing Pains spinoff that was short-lived, Just the 10 of Us, where they had 8 kids and 4
teenagers. That's right. Now, you've seen a lot of people breaking down this video, and you've done it on your own site. And we'll get to the Spot the Killer piece that you wrote, Matt, which is brilliant. But people are trying to make meaning out of it, and there really isn't any. There's no through line for all the stories. There's no bigger message that we're supposed to take away. It's just nonsense, and that's why it's great, right?
Yeah, I feel like the best thing you can sort of write about, if you're going to do an internet piece about Too Many Cooks, is, hey, here it is. Like, why?
That's it.
Just sit back and behold. But there are actually think pieces out there circulating for people who are diving into deeper meaning. And for, you know, even there are some people who just for fun's sake are trying to spot a narrative throughout. Some people feel like the killer is trying to thwart the spread of the intranitis virus, which you find at the end. But then right at the end, when you realize you have the sitcom hadn't even begun and they show you the first few seconds only to stop it, you realize the whole thing has been a giant intro.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can't wait for the sequel, which is supposed to come out next year. So I've read interviews, as I'm sure you have too, Matt, with Casper Kelly, the man who did it. And he said they put this together super cheap with people that he could find that he could get to work for free or nearly for nothing. And those are almost all their real names that are used. But how, I mean, for folks who haven't seen it, how many genres does this thing cover?
It covers a lot. And like, just to touch on the name thing, people thought they were fake names because of just the nature of the video.
Right.
Especially the name Gwydion Lashley Walton, who's like
right.
a cool kid.
Yeah.
That's his real name. Like, as you were saying, he has an IMDb page you can go to.
Wow.
Yeah, it it touches, you know, it goes from the sitcom, it goes to Cop Show, it goes to, like, Dynasty Falcon Crest, it goes to G.I. Joe, to Outer Space. And actually, I was just listening to you talk to Lisa Kudrow about how things are so meta now. These are things that you would expect from even a show like Community to do. They did an all G.I. Joe episode.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
They do claymation episodes. So this isn't even out of the realm of today's comedy.
What do you think about the way Adult Swim dropped this on us? Just in the middle of the night with no promotion. Brilliant, right?
I think that's, yeah, it is brilliant. And that it also lends itself to, you know, that this was just everything aligning just right for this to catch fire on the internet. Because it could have easily, like you said, it's 4 a.m. People could have just, you know, thought they ate bad, you know, Thai food the night
right.
before and dreamt it all.
What the hell am I watching?
And not paid any attention to it the next morning. But it really caught on.
Let's talk about Spot the Killer that you wrote for your site for IGN TV.
Well, it was probably my third watch through. You know, you start realizing, you know, okay, you think that the killer aspect of the video is just one section.
Right.
But then when I started watching it again, I noticed somebody looming behind one of the babies in the intro. And then you go back farther and you realize that the killer is sort of hiding in plain sight since the very beginning of the video.
He's in every cast, right?
The girl with the glasses, I think is the third character introduced, he's standing literally right next to her, not moving. And it's his arm is right there. Then he's on the stairwell while they're taking a family photo. So he's sort of this weird creeping presence that sort of appears Shining style up until he starts actually killing people on the video.
He reminded me so much of Killer Bob in Twin Peaks.
Well, in fact, I think his name is listed as Bill, so it would just be Killer Bill.
Sure. Right. What else do we need to say about Too Many Cooks?
The theme song, of course, which is something that instantly gets stuck in your head because it is played for so much of the actual video, and then to actually see it at the end be treated as sort of an earworm virus that actually does get stuck in your head and causes great pain to people where they want to kill themselves, I think is another great sort of spin on the whole triumphant old 80s sitcom theme song.
I was thinking, what a crazy idea this is now, considering how we want to move on so quickly. Like, some vines are too long. You know, like, that's seven. You can't hang out for 7 seconds and watch that. But this goes for 11 minutes, which is counter to everything that seems to be popular these days.
I know. You know, you would never, you know, everyone would tell you not to put an 11-minute internet video up because of the attention span issues. But this one just, and even people who are expecting it to just be the same thing for 11 minutes before it started changing, became a cop show, became animated. I think they were still all in. I think they were still willing to watch 11 minutes of just characters being introduced.
Well, I mean, I imagine you can't imagine that this is actually still happening.
It's like watching a car chase. However long it goes, that's how long you'll watch.
How are they still doing this?
And let's not forget, as we say goodbye, Matt, let's not forget Lars von Trier as the Pie.
Uncredited, it says in the IMDb page. But yeah, Lars von Trier as the Pie. Another person played Coat.
Well, it's amazing, and I love what you've been writing about it. I'm sure there is more to come as we prepare for the sequel, which is supposed to be out early next year. Matt Fowler has been our guest. He is a writer for IGN.com/TV. He's a writer for their TV channel at IGN.com, and we really appreciate your insight. It's always great to catch up with you, sir. Thank you.
Thanks.
Honey, I'm home.
Too many cooks. Too many cooks. Too many cooks.
At the end of last year, we were introduced to a cable access TV show called Let's Paint and Exercise and Mix Blended Drinks. And it's hosted by a guy by the name of John Kilduff. Here's a little bit of the audio that we had.
Yes, I'm your host, John Kilduff. We're going to get to painting. We're going to do some exercising. And, of course, we're going to make some wonderful blended drinks.
And I know juices are the way to go. You know, I mean,
definitely.
It keeps you healthy. And this is Santa Monica.
All right, man. Hello, caller.
All
right. Okay, so that's where that came from, by the way. A lot of people wanted to know, where did Santa Monica come from? The people prank calling this TV show. Mm-hmm. So Psycho Mike decided that he needed to be on this program.
Yeah. Along with DJ Omar. And Psycho Mike has a band called Band Packs.
Yep.
And you were on when? When were you on this program?
Saturday afternoon.
Now, this is a guy who runs on a treadmill and is terribly out of breath.
And he's wearing a three-piece suit, too, usually, when he's on the treadmill. And he never stops for the whole show. For all 30 minutes of it, he's running on this treadmill while he's painting and making blended drinks.
And I guess his point is that you can be inspired to do whatever you want to do. But, he's really bad at running on a treadmill. You can tell he's out of shape. B, he's the worst painter I've ever seen. And C, the blended drinks blow.
Here's the thing about John Kilduff, though. You may watch this show. And this is, after Saturday, this is the one thing I came away with that I want to give back to the public. Is that you watch the show and you may think, well, this guy's just putting on an act.
Right.
John Kilduff, 100%, genuinely wants the public to be more motivated and do more with their life, and he sincerely believes that his show is helping, and he is 100% a real dude.
Really?
Because but how is his show helping, though? I don't look at him and go, I'm going to aspire to be more like this guy on a cable access show.
He thinks that by multitasking in such a unique way that people can look at that and go, wow, well, I could do much more with my life, too. I mean, he really believes that.
Wow. All right. Take us through the thing.
We get there in Band Packs 1, which is our official automobile, a 1988 Cadillac limo that we all funneled in.
Okay.
And we get there, and we have to sign our contracts, and immediately we load up, and we start the show. And this is how Mr. Kilduff opens up.
Band Packs! All right, people. Band Packs is in the house here on this Saturday morning. Wherever you're watching, Happy New Year to you all. Happy 08. If you're watching in 2009 and you're celebrating 2009, happy 2009. This is a celebration of every year, forever and ever. We're going to celebrate every new year.
I'm sorry, was that DJ Omar Khan?
Yeah, I brought that little drop with me.
And he only played it about 70 times within the half-hour show.
Mike, did he skip the possibility of watching it in 2008?
Yeah,
you
why
only
2009?
Watching it either the end of 2007 or 2009, what's that about?
To be honest, I think Kilduff's cognitive function is affected by the fact that he's in horrible shape and is sprinting on a treadmill.
This is the funniest part, is that this is the very beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And he's so out of breath, he may not make it.
And by the way, you'll hear later on in this clip, he's going about 2 miles an hour. Omar's one who motivates him to try to go faster.
By the way, I brought a fog machine with me.
Right.
So before we start, he's all like, I don't know about that fog, you know, because I'm going to be, you know, running on the treadmill. So as soon as we start the show, I'm all blasting the fog.
Did he ask you to turn it down and you just cranked it?
Yeah, totally.
Nice.
Awesome.
All right, here's the rest of the show.
All right, coming down your passage, John. You know, you got your money. Faster, John!
That is Omar. It may have been a mistake to give Omar a microphone.
I brought my own PA.
You must. What time of the day was this?
11:45.
11. We started 11:30. On air. It was
11
on
in the morning.
Yeah.
Omar blasted out of his mind.
Hammered.
You gotta go faster.
And that was the theme of the whole show, is Omar's a mental patient. Well, John Kilduff has a sidekick by the name of Inga.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Swedish exchange student. And
Dave's nailing her, by the way.
Yeah, he is. This time she wasn't helping making blended drinks. She was making a New Year's pudding pie.
Okay.
And this is Inga.
Yeah.
Oh, Inga, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Inga's Swedish pudding.
Inga's pudding!
All right, let's take another call here.
Yeah.
Hi, caller. Welcome to Let's Pay Cooking Our Size Blood Drinks.
Let's go. Oh, what?
DJ Omar Khan.
Okay. Did she say you're gay?
Yep. Yeah. And hung up.
And you're yelling?
Yeah.
So basically, you got Psycho Mike going, what? And Omar playing.
DJ Omar Khan.
Yeah.
Now, what's the deal? Because it's cable access, there's nobody screening these phone calls, and there's no delay button. People just get on and say whatever they want.
It's
right?
Legal. 100%. It's legal. You can say the F word. You can say everything that you want
to
say.
Yeah. And, you won't be able to hear in the phone in the audio I sent in because the audio is so terrible. But I called in 3 times from inside the studio.
So if you want to watch this, you can go to krock.com, the Kevin and Bean page. The links are up. There's 3 different links, I think, for what's going on. Okay. What's the next clip?
Inga's resolution for the new year.
I'm sure Inga has something, one of her own kind of resolution.
I would like to make enough money to get breast enlargement.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You guys are
doing nothing but causing noise.
Yeah, dude.
Just, this has ruined the show is what this
is. Well, the studio is about 40 square feet, and you've got a full band, a couple producers, cameramen, DJ Omar Khan, John Kilduff, and a
DJ Omar Khan.
And a Swedish exchange student. So it got a little crazy.
Yeah, hear me rocking a little bit of the Rick James in there, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Kilduff decides to take some
calls. Is he upset with you guys? I mean, is he getting angry because you're clearly trying to sabotage this program?
He just rolls with everything. It's insane. You'll
doesn't
hear.
Bother him. This is the truth.
It's insane. It's insane. He like really thinks that we are getting our creative juices out there and is really like inspired by people getting their creativity going.
So what you two are doing, which is basically ruining his show, he thinks you're helping?
Uh-huh.
He thinks you're pushing?
He sprints out of the show. As soon as we finish taping, he sprints out. And Omar's like, oh, dude, he's mad at me.
Yeah.
He's mad at me, man.
Yeah.
Omar walks out. He's like,
DJ Omar Khan.
Hey, Kilduff, I'm sorry if I went a little bit overboard. And John Kilduff says to him, it was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. He goes, Omar, don't worry about it, buddy. Everybody wants to be a star.
All right, what's the next clip?
Couple callers.
What do you want to do in the year 2020? What's that?
Washed up has been.
Oh.
What did he say? I couldn't hear.
You washed up has been F.
Oh.
Kilduff, don't let him get you down. You're not a has-been.
Hello, Carr. You're on. What's your resolution?
Carr, you're not a has-been because you never accomplished anything.
Oh! Okay.
DJ Omar Khan.
Okay. Dear God, did you just stop playing? Why would you give Omar his own button?
So Omar,
DJ Omar Khan.
One of the many times he interrupts the show, he interrupts and he says, John, I actually made a shirt. For you and
I
for this show.
For the show. Yes.
You did.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, check it out.
All right.
Get out of here.
Let's be.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's be.
What do you think, John?
I like it. The creative process leads to more, if you will, because you're happy. And when you're happy, you get more laid.
Yeah, so I took a white shirt and I put Let's Paint on the front with a happy face and then on the back in big letters and F with the sad face on the bottom. And he was like, oh,
why is there
cool.
a sad face after the effing?
Because I thought he'd find it
sad.
Okay.
All right.
Inga finished with the pudding and went on to making Swedish meatballs.
More meatballs for everyone.
Someone told us when we were discussing Let's Paint TV last year that Inga is John's wife. Is that true, Mike? Can you verify?
Very much untrue.
Really?
Very true.
Really?
Yeah.
She's just an actress or what?
Listen, many a times when we were off camera, I went up to Kilduff and I was like, listen, you can. We're off camera now, off the record. Was this an act or is this an... Oh, no, Inga's real. Inga's real. I'm an artist. I just want to get my painting out there. And I'm telling you, he's legit because unless he's the greatest character actor this side of Borat, it's legit because he stayed in character and Inga stayed in character for hours beforehand.
Inga
and
thinks
after.
She's helping and doing good work and blah blah blah.
I think so.
Wow,
I think so. Here's Inga's recap of the day's show and some more of Inga's pudding.
Well, let's just get a recap of what Inga did here today.
I make pie with a pudding.
Pie.
Pudding pie with pie. Ball.
Pudding pie with balls. Pie and balls.
It is delicious.
Inga's pie! Inga's pie! Inga's pie!
You guys are doing everything you can to drive this man to an early grave, and he seems to like
it. He's all good with it, yeah.
It's funny you say that, drive him to an early grave, Kevin, because Omar officially almost killed us.
Uh-oh.
And I mean that literally.
What happened?
Well, we're wrapping up the show, and Kilduff points to Omar and to Bandpacks, and he says, cut, cut, cut. He's doing this because he wants to wrap up the show. You're given a lot amount of time, and if
he wants his closing thoughts or whatever?
He has to give his closing thoughts.
Okay.
So he cuts us, and he's giving his closing thoughts, and Omar thinks it's a great time to light off a big sheet of fireworks.
That's my man.
That's
my man.
Now, you know when really extreme things happen in your life? It can happen in a matter of seconds, but it seems like it's an eternity in your brain.
Sure.
Well, I'm standing behind Kilduff at this point. I'm helping him paint. Omar throws the fireworks down by my leg, and they're going to blow me up. And Omar's screaming, Mike,
I'm
Mike,
screaming
look.
Right because I decided to play as my music close, Kung Fu Fighting.
Okay.
So it's blaring, and Mike's playing his guitar and painting and stuff, and the firecrackers land on his foot.
Right.
And I'm thinking, OS, like, oh my God. And I'm like, Mike, move, move.
So I look down, and as I look down, I think to myself, those are fireworks on a sheet, a painting cloth that is soaked in paint thinner.
Oh, good.
And paint.
I didn't know.
And I watched myself kick over the paint remover, like 2 seconds before that, I kicked over the paint remover, and it's all over the floor and all over my leg.
Nice.
Oh my God. So this is all happening, and then the explosion. And you watch this on the video. It is the funniest part of the whole video. You have never seen true fear like John Kilduff when those explode in the studio. It is the funniest thing you'll ever see. Listen.
Okay, everybody. That's it. The show's over.
Oh, no. Massive explosion. Massive, huge.
In a room the size of your kitchen, listeners,
I did
okay?
That specifically for Kevin.
Oh, that. Yeah. You rule. Yeah. Oh. You rule. We almost burned this place down just before the holidays.
Yeah,
you know. Almost fireworks.
Yeah.
Well, you will not be invited back.
I doubt that, actually. Yeah. I think Killed Up will have us anytime
and
we want.
And I'm so going to be there. I was out of town, but I did receive this phone call from Omar.
Hey, Kevin. This is Omar. You're a f***. Happy holidays. All right, let's paint TV and all that bullshit. It was, you. Pick up your cell phone.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph brought us a story earlier this week that I, perhaps alone, was fascinated with, and that is that Bruce Springsteen, one of my favorite singers of all time, one of the great live performers that ever stepped on the boards, is about to make the archive available to us. He has been, he's been so heavily bootlegged over the years. He's been a great live performer for 40 years, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of bootleg tapes out there. Well, they've recorded a lot of those shows, and they're about to start releasing them officially so that fans can buy them in better quality, which I just think is fantastic.
That seems like a win-win.
Yeah, it seems like if you're a Springsteen fan, of course it's a win-win. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's famous for, marathon four-hour concerts sometimes. He does lots of covers. He reinvents his own songs. And they have just started dipping their toes into this a little bit by releing a recent show. And they're going to go back into the archives and release some of the most requested fan shows. And I'm really excited about it. We want to find out more about it with the boss himself on the phone. Bruce Springsteen joins us back on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Hi, Bruce. Happy holidays to you, sir.
Hey, same to you, Kevin and Bean. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you.
Great to talk to you. I understand that they came to you a few years ago and you turned them down, but now you've changed your mind on releasing all these live shows. How come?
Yeah, this group, Nugs.net is the name of them, and they came to us and said, we've done this for some other bands. We'd like to archive the live music that's floating around out there and put it in one place for your fans to get it. And initially I said no, and the bootleg thing could take care of itself. But I realized all the stuff we've got on YouTube and things like that, that if there's an appetite for it and the fans want to see it, why not, make some high-quality downloads for them and also, make a couple bucks. I'm not against money,
Right. Sure. Yeah, of course. And so far most of the downloads that are available have been from this current tour, the High Hopes tour, right?
Right. Yeah. Most of it is that, the New Zealand show, and also, the launch that we did for the Wrecking Ball tour in New York, and back in 2012, that's also up there. But we're going to start putting more stuff up because it turns out my fans are just a bunch of idiots, man.
Why would you say anything?
They'll buy anything that I play. It's crazy. I have no idea. I'm going to be so much richer than I was before.
It is pretty true that they'll buy anything you play.
Yeah, they're crazy. My fans are just stupid, crazy people.
We would call them rabid. I think.
Yeah,
that's...
I'd call them idiots.
Okay.
I call them insane idiots.
Okay.
But apparently they got a lot of disposable income, so I'll take it, man.
We went to the website, which is live.brucespringsteen.net, and we picked up, we got a couple of clips from some of your shows that you're being offered now, and we wanted to ask you about them. Like, I think this first clip we have, Kevin, is this the one from the 2012 from the Wrecking Ball show that he was talking
about? Recent tour, yeah.
Okay.
I remember growing up back in Jersey. Sometimes it would get so cold, I once almost killed my sister with my freezing powers. The trolls made her forget, but I can't forget. The snow glows white on the mountain tonight. Not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't
it go.
Really?
Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go. Wow. Let it go. Turn away. Slam the door, Stevie.
Does that crowd cheer like that during your entire song?
Yeah, that's, I told you, they're assholes.
That's amazing.
Well, they're fans of yours. But look, I know you're famous for covering hundreds of different songs, but really, the Frozen song?
Yeah,
Let It
I
Go?
Can play anything, and they'll buy it.
Well, that's
people
true.
Will buy it. All right, now we're going way back, Bruce. I don't know anything about this clip, but let's hear it. This is from your 1983 tour, I guess, just before Born in the USA came out. You had a very popular big tour across the world. Let's hear what this one sounds like.
You know, when I was growing up in Jersey, my mother would always say, "Hey, Bruce, when are you going to live your life right?" And I'd say, "Oh, Ma, I'm just a girl. I want to have fun. I come home in the morning light. My mother says, when you going to live your life right? Oh, mother dear, we're not the fortunate ones. And girls, they want to have fun. Oh, girls just want to have fun."
Wow, I would not have thought you'd cover that one.
Yeah, well, look, I did Royals by Lord. Man.
That's
yeah.
true.
People will buy literally anything I record.
All right.
Amazing. What's wrong with these assholes?
Well, I think they're fans of yours. And I don't
are,
think...
they, are they damaged? Are they mentally damaged?
Well, I think they're just huge fans
of
you.
A lot of the
you're...
stuff I record is crap.
Huh, okay.
I keep buying it.
I don't think they feel that
4-hour show, you're going to have some filler.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. One more show, Bruce, from the archives. This one goes back to the 1970s.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
You know, when I was growing up in Jersey, we'd spend our summers on the boardwalk. That's where everybody met. It was like the social scene of a teenager in Jersey.
Could have been edited out.
The crowd loves it. The crowd loves it. I know that.
How is this a thing? No. Bruce, no one needs to hear that.
I'm selling those pants if you want to buy them.
That was you. That was the OG Kevin hanging up on yet another guest here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, we told you yesterday morning, first thing, about a Huntington Beach man who has been going to Disneyland every single day since January 1st, 2012, I think, is when he started. So he's well over 1,000 days in a row going to Disneyland every single day, okay? We're talking to him on tomorrow's Kevin Bean Show, by the way. He's going
to
be our guest.
That's it. But to us, that's a not just that you like Disneyland, because a lot of people do. But, you know, you got to get to, like, day 400 and go, you know, I could skip a day. But
right, exactly.
but it's the streak. Right. You don't want to break the streak. So you have to
exactly.
Going.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions about his streak of Disneyland, but that got us talking about streaks in general, things that people do for whatever period of time. It's an everyday thing or a once-a-week thing or whatever it is, but they keep the streak alive. We had that guy in. Lisa, you chugged a beer with that guy who was his thing.
Was
he was every single day, I think, he was chugging a beer in a different Southern California location. And he could wake up one day and not feel like driving down to, you know, Escondido and taking a shot of beer, but he wants to keep the streak alive. He wants to keep doing it X number of days in a row, so he does it. That's what we're looking for right now, is you've got a streak going of something that you do, whatever it is. I think most of these are probably going to be everyday things, would you imagine?
I would guess, but I mean, it really does. The streak drives you more than what you want. Like,
right.
Sometimes you're just not in the mood. Bean tried to get his hair cut in all 50 states without repeating.
Yes.
That was his streak.
That's right.
And he made it how many states before you gave up and quit like a loser?
I would prefer to look at it that way. But
I mean,
I don't know. I think I did about 15 in a row or something like that, where I managed to coordinate my travel schedule so that I got a haircut in Michigan, and then I got a haircut in Florida, and then I got a haircut in Iowa. But the key was, again, I didn't want to, you know, cheat in between and get a haircut at home. I wanted to always have them in consecutive different states. And then I just ran out of the time to do it. So I had to break the streak.
Plus, it was a stupid streak.
Luckily, he didn't give a rat's ass about what his hair looked like most of the
no,
time.
No, I didn't. I would wait as long as it took until I could travel again to get it cut. I didn't drive to Idaho one time just because it was just getting super bad. But how about these people who, for instance, and you see a lot of these YouTube videos that people put together where they take a photo of themselves every day for like 8 years.
Daily selfie or whatever, yeah.
Exactly.
There's a guy named Noah. Remember that? And he had he's still doing it.
You watched him age through the years as he did it.
It's fascinating.
So we are interested in what your streaks are at 1-800-520-1067. I will tell you, and this is going to be hard to believe that this is me, but I had a retail job as a teenager, and I got the same thing for lunch. It was pizza. I got the same pizza for lunch every single day that I worked for, I think it was around 6 months or so.
Okay.
That was my streak.
I guess I can see that, but did you do it because of the streak, or did you do it because you were still in the mood for pizza?
I don't know. I mean, I bet the streak had something to do with it. Is I could get something else, but I could also keep the streak going and get pizza again today. I'm sure that was some of it. As stupid as that sounds, you do find yourself making choices like that sometimes.
I have a streak of hanging up on guests.
Don't let that go.
Really? And you are undefeated, Kevin.
Really trying to make it happen.
So what is your streak? We want to hear about it. I don't think we'll get anything as crazy as going to Disneyland every day for over 1,000 days, but we want to hear what your streak is. Give us a call. 1-800-520-1067. We'll talk to you next right after this on K-Rock. Taking your calls right now at 1-800-520-1067. We want to talk about what streaks you've got going in your life. Wow, we got some great calls and a couple of good emails, too. Travis writes in high school, I ditched school for 67 consecutive days.
Wow!
That's commitment.
Then I was kicked out of school. Will writes in, hey guys, I had a streak of calling the Afra line every single day, even while my wife was in labor. I even called from the hospital. That's right, with mother effing doo-doo on it. Respectfully, Will. Remember that guy when he was calling us every single day?
Yep.
That was his streak. That was what he was choosing to do with his time.
These streaks are nonsense. They're never important.
Well, we haven't heard a good one yet. That's for sure. All right, let's try Veronica. She's on line two. We'll ease into this from Corona. Veronica joins us. Hi, welcome to the show. What's going on?
Hi, and hello, Lisa May.
Hello.
What's your streak?
I did 102 days of posting jokes on Facebook, and when I stopped my streak, I got a lot of people asking for them still.
So you're saying one joke a day for 102 days?
One joke a day for 102 days, and sometimes I'll make up a joke. If you want to hear one, I've got it for you.
Wait a minute.
Did you? Is this one you made up?
This is one I made up.
I would like to hear it. Bean hates jokes and hates
the
telling of
jokes. All right, Veronica, before we hear this, how many people stopped following you on Facebook because of your stupid joke a day?
None.
Bean just hates jokes. All right, Bean, take your headphones off for a second. Go ahead.
Let's hear it.
Okay, here's the joke. What do you call it when a gymnast lends out her leotard?
Well, it's a well-constructed joke.
I don't know what.
Okay, here's the answer. Retard. Come on.
Hey, listen, she made it up.
She did.
I did.
Not good, but she made it up, and so you got to give her credit for that.
And she did sell it with enthusiasm. I got to give her some points for her gusto. All right, Veronica, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let's go to, let's go to Chris. He's in downtown L.A. He is on line six.
All right. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Good.
So I have been eating Eggo Cinnamon Toast waffles every day for like 20 years since they were first introduced for breakfast.
Wow! Eggo's Cinnamon Toast waffles are awesome. First of all,
on day 10, though, how is that still something that you crave?
Right, and then day 100 and then day 1,000.
You never wanted an omelet or something?
Not really. I mean, I eat them every day. They're good.
Do you live by yourself?
Of course. Let's not be ridiculous. Kind of like that can't get a woman.
Listen to Chris. What about, do you ever travel?
Ooh, good question.
Not really.
Nope. Okay, because they told me because of the streak, Bean.
Right, exactly. Because I was going to say, on the road, that might be tough if you're in a hotel or something like that. So every single day, you've never missed a day over 20 years.
Yeah, since they first introduced the waffles.
That's insane. That's shocking. What about, do you have any other peculiar eating habits for the rest of the day, like for lunch and dinner? Do you have a thing that you do?
No, I'm more flexible for those. But for breakfast,
isn't that amazing?
The Eggo Cinnamon Toast Waffle.
I thought going to Disneyland for 1,000 days is unbeatable. This guy did this for over 20 years.
I can't believe that.
You crazy.
We're speechless. We're speechless,
I have
Chris.
Nothing to say.
We really are. I mean, you will die of diabetes at 40, but thank you for calling. We really appreciate it, okay?
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right, let's go to Worm. He's on line 3, and he's in Whittier. He's our people.
His name is Worm?
Worm, yes.
Hey, Worm.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, Lisa May.
Hi there.
How are you, our people?
I've been smoking weed for the since I was 18. I am 39 years old right now. I have not missed one day.
You smoke weed every single day?
Every single day.
For 21 years?
Yes.
How do you...
How am I actually getting stoned right now?
Okay, well, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all.
I don't doubt that at all.
You've never run into a supply problem in 21 years? The dealer was out or something?
Actually, besides my dealer, I go to my buddies and they usually smoke me out for free. They also call me FedEx because I'm always on time to smoke.
Huh.
I'm going to guess you've never flown anywhere.
Oh, good question.
I have it.
Out of the country?
I get it from other states.
Oh, so you'll fly to wherever and then locate the weed?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what's your deal, Worm? Are you a guy who needs a bowl in the morning to get going, or is it something you do to relax at night after work? Yeah, like you have a job. But what? how does it work into your day? You're retired.
Retired.
You're 39.
What are you? Yeah. What are you retired from?
I have a congenital heart disease.
Oh, okay. Now
so you're on
like
disability?
Nickel. Yes.
Does the weed help?
Sure, why not?
He doesn't know. I thought maybe that would be the reason.
All right, Worm, we'll keep doing what you're doing, I guess.
Oh, I'm not going to stop.
Nope. No, I don't think you are. I don't think you are. Thank you for the call. This is crazy, these calls.
Wow, we were afraid we wouldn't get good ones.
Let's go to Michael in Irvine. I don't even understand what's up on the screen here, so let's have Michael explain.
Hey, Michael.
Hello.
What's your streak?
Hi there.
My streak is in Hearthstone. Blizzard Entertainment makes a game called Hearthstone that's kind of like Magic the Gathering meets World of Warcraft. And you can play for free or pay money if anyone's played Magic the Gathering. It's like $4 for a pack of cards. But with the game, you can play, do some quests, get some gold, and then do arena runs or just buy the packs out straight.
I don't understand any of these words.
When did the game come out?
The game's already been out for a few months.
Okay, but sort of like, mm-hmm. What is your streak, though? I didn't hear what your streak was.
Sorry, the streak is that I'm trying to set the record or break the record for the most, like, packs opened in one go that were earned, like, for free. Like, didn't pay anything for them.
You have to take that long.
I'm half Chinese. I'm a stereotype, I know.
Honestly, you should try women. They're the best.
They are awesome.
Yeah.
Or no, but cinnamon Eggos or weed. I mean, any of the other caller suggestions would beat whatever it is you're trying to do here, Michael.
I work two jobs. I'm in the game industry in one of them, so this is actually kind of like work.
Okay. But look, I understand. Look,
it's a cover job, but okay.
Michael, I understand if you want to beat a game, get to the highest level, the highest score, whatever it is, but the streak that you're describing is the number of free packs that are opened on a game? I mean, that's not even a real thing, right?
You can check Reddit. It's actually a thing. Like, people will video it. Kotaku wrote an article trying to break down the statistics of, like, well, what are the odds of opening it? Oh, okay, the reason it gets exciting for some people to watch is because when you open it, there's four different classes of cards: commons, rares, epics, and legendaries.
You don't have to tell us.
0.5% chance of cracking open a legendary. And so gamers, it's when they'll freak out if you open up like a really awesome card. It's like, holy crap, you got that card I want so bad, and it would cost a ridiculous amount to try and get in the game. It's a mix of the odds, like just being lucky as hell, combined with if you want to grind it away in the game, it would take, I don't know, weeks or months to just craft that card yourself.
Michael, will you marry me?
Are you asking me that just because I have Asperger's syndrome?
As long as you're getting other gamers to freak out, that's as worthwhile a goal as anyone needs, I guess.
Yeah, no. Thanks. We all have Thanks. Our hobbies, right?
Dude, good luck with that.
We think.
I want part two of Beer Mug's red carpet interviews at the TCA.
They're on the way.
Okay.
They're coming up.
Jessica Chobot from the Nerdist website as well joins us to talk Comic-Con in just a few minutes. First, though, Kevin, when the Sound of Music Live was presented on NBC last Christmas time, did you watch it?
No.
It was a sensation, you'll recall.
But not okay. very good, as I also recall.
You mean it was a lot of people watched it, but yes. most of them hated it?
A lot of people watched it. I don't know if most of them hated it. I do know the critics were not very kind to it. I mean, that's got to be one of the toughest things in the world is to put a live show, a live, you know, stage presentation on television,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah,
right?
I would think so, too.
I think it'd be tough to do. Well, they it was such a hit that NBC announced that this was not going to be the last time they were doing it. And we were waiting breathlessly to find out what this year's movie was going to be. And they chose Peter Pan, which was a book, obviously, and then a stage show, and it's been made into a movie numerous times. So Peter Pan is going to be happening. It's going to air on December the 4th. It's going to be live once again. No casting information has been unveiled yet, like who will play Peter, except for Captain Hook, played by the great Christopher Walken. And I think that's a fantastic choice.
That's weird. I have a strange – I don't know. It's weird to picture him doing that.
Because you think of him in so many movies, especially in recent years, as being a bad guy, for instance?
Well, he can't not be Christopher Walken.
Yeah, that's...
I mean,
yeah.
The way that he talks is the way that he talks.
He doesn't exactly disappear into a role.
No, you're right about that. But he is not only Academy Award winner, he has been nominated for several Tonys throughout the years, an Emmy winner. I mean, the guy is a terrific actor, and we've seen him, you know, from the Fatboy Slim video from back in the day. We know what a great dancer he is as well. But what does he plan to bring to the role as Captain Hook? We asked Dave, who can we talk to? And can you believe it? He got Christopher Walken himself to join us on the phone to talk about the upcoming show on NBC. Hi, Mr. Walken. Welcome, sir.
Take that.
You okay?
I'm God.
Are you sword fighting?
Yeah. All right. Time out. Captain Bane.
Hi. Yes. Hi, Mr. Walken.
Sorry you caught me. I was a little busy rehearsing for Captain Hook.
Right. What were you doing there? Was that a sword fight?
I was sword fighting.
Okay.
Because Captain Hook is a pirate.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Arr.
Well... You might need to work on that.
Maybe you should.
You should practice.
Thank
you.
Congratulations on the role. Is it exciting for you to think about being live on a national television network?
Of course. I've done lots of theater before, but to reach an audience of this size with a project like this, it's beyond exciting.
Right. And you're 71 years old. You've been acting for a long, long time. It must be fun to be doing something totally different as well.
I can't wait to put on that hat and that big mustache, that hook.
Right.
Go after Peter Pan,
uh-huh.
little bastard. I'm going to kill him.
What?
Well, find him and take my sword and run it through his guts.
But don't you have a script that you have to follow?
Until he bleeds. All over the stage.
No.
That's not how that story goes.
I want his little dead. I want his little fairy friend dead.
No, not
his little Tinkerbell.
Oh, you can't hurt Tinkerbell. She's
adorable.
I'm going to
get Tinkerbell.
Oh,
don't get me wrong. I'm taking Tinkerbell.
Captain Hook, look.
And I'm going to rip the wings off.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
Terrible.
Like you would a fly.
No, please don't talk about that.
Then I'm going to take Tinkerbell, the tiny little butt.
Nope.
I don't want to hear this.
And I'm going to smack it and say, I don't believe in you. And then she'll die.
Why? What's wrong with you? Why are you so angry today?
Because I'm a villain. I'm Captain Hook.
Right, but do you know the story?
I have to get into character or else none of this will work.
But you're Captain Hook and you scare the kids.
Yeah,
but ultimately,
I do. Because
ultimately,
they know I'm going to kill them.
Right. They think you're going to, but ultimately you don't because they win.
I'm
going to
take all the Lost Boys. I'm going to go on the island of Lost Boys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drop napalm on them.
What is wrong with you?
I'm going to burn the Lost Boys.
Oh, my God.
No, just this piles is, of cinder.
This is horrible.
Oh,
nobody
yeah,
wants you, to see this.
You're going
to
probably urinate on the ashes of what the Lost Boys.
What's wrong with you? This is going to be Christmas time.
Ah, my favorite time of year for murdering people.
Okay. You're going to scar the youth of America if you do any of this. Just stick to the script, Mr. Walken.
This is a new Captain Hook for a new time.
Sounds like it. Wow.
Where these little assholes are getting murdered.
All right.
By Captain Hook and
right.
my friend Smee. I can't wait for me and Smee to get on my boat and just start murdering
okay.
children.
We're going to let you go back to what you were doing.
Uh-oh.
What's that? What's happening?
You recognize that sound?
Yes. That's the ticking clock in the crocodile.
No, it's the watch that's up my ass.
Oh!
That's pretty loud, considering it's up your ass.
The sold-out 25th Annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas shows at the Forum are this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, which means you're about out of time to win your way in, but we've got two chances for you coming up this morning, one next hour and one in the 9 o'clock hour to win your way in from the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock, so good luck.
Near the end of the year, we start doing our top 10 lists, and the one that we're up to today is top 10 Bean tweets.
Let me tell you a story about a douchebag named Bean. His favorite hobby's not cheap, it's really tweeting. Oh, you suck, Bean, you suck so freaking much. I don't know why you tweet so much, cause no one gives a f***. Oh, you suck, Bean, you suck so freaking much. Here come the top 10 Bean tweets, and they all freaking suck.
You seem a tiny touching. Bit harsh,
no,
guys.
That's so sweet.
Hard suck and douchebag. I don't know.
He went easy on
tweeting.
You. What's about to happen is going to be worse.
Yeah, top 10, by the way, is such a misnomer in this particular case because it really is the worst of Bean's tweets. And can you imagine how bad they have to be the worst Bean tweets?
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment.
All right, let's go start with the 10th worst, working our way up to number one.
Every time I remember that one of the fat boys is dead, it's my personal 9/11.
Now, what's the problem?
I know we don't have time
to discuss
how
this.
How often
but...
do you think about the fat boys being dead?
Yeah.
Well,
and
you hear a
you
fat
don't even
voice.
Know which one is.
It's the one of the fat ones. Look, a song will come on. You know, you'll be listening to the, you know, the old school, and a song will come on. You go, oh man, so sad they're not with us anymore. It just kind of bums you out. That's all. That's a
nope.
that's a legitimate feeling to have, by the way, and to share. I'm sure there are other people out there who feel the same way.
My pancake is an innie. Hashtag my pancake is an innie.
I don't even remember that one.
Listen to him laugh.
Yeah,
Bean never laughs except for these.
It was a picture of a pancake that had sort of an indentation in it.
Okay,
you tweeted it.
That was all right. Maybe that doesn't.
You tweeted
hold,
about
hold
that.
Maybe that doesn't hold up for all time.
I would do anything for love, but I won't do fat.
What am I supposed to say? I stand by it.
That's eight, right? We still have seven more?
Number eight.
Yeah.
What was the, when was the year I Will Do Anything for Love by Meatloaf was popular?
I think about 93, maybe.
All right. That's all I just wanted to know. I just wanted to know what the time delay was on that joke. I was just
more
curious.
Than 20 years, yeah. if that's okay. what you're asking.
All right, then.
Excellent. Player's going to play. Hater's going to hate. I'm just going to shake it off. Damn it, Taylor Swift. Now I got to get another of your songs tattooed.
God, I hate you.
I believe that was the day the song came out.
Nobody
I think that
cares.
Was my excitement over
no
hearing
one
that
cares.
New song.
Yeah.
I think the guy who gave the fly its name was not trying very hard.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you,
because
King.
It's a little insect
it
that flies.
Kind of
oh, let's name it a fly.
But
come
it,
on.
Again, that's... how old is that movie?
No, he's not talking
about the movie. I wasn't talking about the movie.
He's just talking about the
flies. Just flies?
Yeah. Yeah. How old are flies, more importantly?
How old are flies been around?
Oh. Nothing to do with the movie at all. Number five.
Let's all toast a delicious, sweet, non-alcoholic beverage to the late, great Shirley Temple. But what should we call it?
You can't give yourself a flaw.
Not me, it's the audience.
You're playing the sound effect.
See, Muggs, you don't get this, but there's an actual drink that fits that description that's called a Shirley Temple. That was named after the popular actress. Oh, jeez, wow, and Muggs is turning on you.
Number four. My goals for 2014. One, more hanky-panky. Two, less hokey-pokey.
Come on.
Holy
how
crap.
Old is that one?
How's that? I don't know what you
how
mean.
Old is the hokey pokey or whatever BS?
The hokey pokey's been around a while.
1930s. All right, good reference.
That's a joke someone makes at an old age home playing gin.
And then everybody else yells at them for doing it.
Saying, turn up the thermostat, I'm cold, where's my cardigan?
Come on, Ralph, I'm very close to being that guy.
Number three. Where's the plane?
Oh. Thank you. Whoever wrote that, thank you, sir.
That's just one of many, many, many where's the plane tweets that were like sprinkled throughout the year.
It's like one of 10.
By the way, I got an email from a listener today who is disappointed that we haven't followed up on where the rat ship is, by the way. Is that thing still out there floating in the water, Ralph, the rat ship?
I don't know. I don't know where the rat ship
Here's
is.
Here's the thing. Don't care. Don't care.
I'm already pre-sad knowing that Willie Nelson will probably die one day.
That's where pre-sad came
That's
from.
That's where pre-sad came from. That was number two, yeah. Pre-sad. Not a thing.
Nope.
And the number one top worst bean tweet of the year. I feel like the letter Q should come earlier in the alphabet.
What does that even mean? What does it mean?
You just, we had this whole discussion at the time. I don't want to get back into the specifics of it.
Like,
but just for
30 seconds. It was the worst tweet of the year.
Who thinks
that one of the letters should go earlier in the alphabet?
Who has a problem with the order of letters?
It just seemed like there were a bunch of those, like, big, heavy kind of letters with lots of squiggles that were kind of
heavy.
Just kind of bunched up at one point of the alphabet. I feel like they need to spread it around. Like, if they spread that down by the D's, the E's, the F's in there, where it's a little calmer, the waters are a little smoother, I just feel like it would be a much better balanced alphabet. That's all I was trying to say there. That wasn't meant to be a joke, by the way. That was legitimately... It would look better, I think, if the Q were moved in the alphabet.
By the way, you're not helping yourself. It wasn't meant to be a joke. It better be a joke.
It wasn't meant to be a joke.
Or you're insane.
If it's not a joke, you need shock therapy.
I'm going to write a strongly worded letter to whoever's managing the alphabet and see if we can get that thing mixed up.
You need a lobotomy.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Who's with me?
I'm wow. all, I am all, I'm full in on wow.
Oh. You.
Those were the top 10 bean tweets, and they all freaking sucked.
Hey, quick reminder, by the way, that K-Rock's annual blood drive is going to be happening next Thursday. That's a week from – today's Wednesday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so a week from tomorrow, October 2nd at Universal Studios Hollywood, starting at 6 a.m. Our own Ralph Garman is going to be down there, so you can go down and meet him. Tons of K-Rock prizes. You can get all the details and sign up for an appointment at krock.com. But we do try to do this every year right around the Halloween season because people need blood. So krock.com, go get all the details and head on down and see Ralph next Thursday.
You know how they say don't criticize somebody until you've walked a mile in their shoes?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I'd like to try. I think I'd like to try with this next guy.
Okay.
Who are we talking about? What's going on?
Well, we're talking about the guy who has up to 100 unwanted orgasms a day.
I think unwanted might be the key here, Kevin.
Every single day. Look,
I think that's what's confusing Kevin.
Here's my thing. Is there such a thing?
Yes.
Apparently. As an unwanted orgasm.
Yes, of course there is. 50 orgasms in, Kevin, do you think that feels good?
Do you know for a fact? I'd like to try it. I'm just saying.
All right. What's this guy's story? How did it start? What's his life like? Tell me.
Well, it starts off there's going to be – he. You'll hear him going through the process of what happens to him during some of this interview.
Okay.
So
because he can't stop it.
He's having an episode. He's doubled over on the ground having an episode, and then the woman starts explaining who he is and what's going on.
Father of two, Dale Decker, suffers from a rare and seemingly incurable condition that leads to him suffering up to 100 unwanted orgasms a day.
Father of two. Can you imagine? Now there I can see why you would want to perhaps be able to control things.
In front of your kids. Listen to him.
Yeah, he's...
He's on the ground.
It doesn't sound like fun, Kevin.
I'm just saying. I'm saying I don't know, Bean. You know for a fact? I'm saying I don't.
I'm just using logic that it can't feel good.
He will tell you.
There's nothing pleasurable about it because even though it might physically feel good.
All right. So right there, there's nothing pleasurable about it except for the fact that it might feel good. But then he continues.
Depending on where you're at, if you're in public, if you're around strangers, I mean, it can make a person break real fast.
Yeah, spends most of his time in his house.
Aww.
I mean, imagine the embarrassment trying to be in public. You're standing in line at a grocery store, and all of a sudden you have to keel over. You know, I mean, that's no way to live.
And what's it called?
The 37-year-old is the first man to ever speak publicly about the condition known as persistent sexual arousal syndrome, or PSAS. And he says it's ruining his life.
Okay. It's kind of funny, though, let's be honest. PSAS.
It sounds horrible,
Persistent
Kevin.
Sexual arousal syndrome.
I hope you get it.
All right. Now, I want you guys, knowing what you know so far, to think of worst case scenario. This guy can't control when and how many orgasms he has. Worst case scenario. What would he be doing where it would be terrible for this to be a problem?
Funeral.
When you're on your knees at your father's funeral.
Good catch, Lisa.
How did you know that?
No.
All right, so I want you to picture this. They're at his dad's funeral. And he doubles. I don't know the physics of it or whatever, but he does double over on the ground every time.
Oh, my
God. So
now
he's at his dad's funeral.
They're hiding that.
When you're on your knees at your father's funeral, at his casket, and you're saying goodbye to him, and then you have 9 orgasms right there while your whole family is standing behind you. This makes you never want to have another orgasm as long as you live.
He had 9.
But you know what? You just keep on coming.
C-O-M-I-N-G, by the way.
Right. Listen to how sad and how miserable he sounds, though.
Yeah,
father's
Kevin.
Funeral with the family.
Come on.
Yeah. Look, right there, I'm like, oh, dear God,
it's
no.
It's sad, but you just don't. Do you go?
Do you go to your dad's funeral?
It sounds like this
you
happens
do.
All the time, no matter what he does.
I would say you go, but maybe stay in the back. Don't have your family behind you. You know what I mean? Like, hide in the back somewhere.
I wonder what it's like for his wife, by the way, because there's no way he ever wants to have sex, is there?
That's coming up.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Hold on to that thought. First, how did it start? How did it happen?
Dale, from Wisconsin in America, was enjoying his suburban life in 2012 when he slipped a disc in his back while getting out of a chair.
That was it.
Really?
And by the way, this is 2 years ago, so he's had up to 100 orgasms a day for 2 years because he got hurt getting out of a chair. He slipped a disc, and they don't understand how, but that's exactly when this all started happening.
Triggering the condition for unknown reasons.
Put me in the back of the ambulance to take me to the hospital. And on the way there, I had my first 5 orgasms, and they've never stopped.
Can you imagine you slip a disc, which is super painful?
Yes.
Then they put you in an ambulance, and this is the first time that this has happened to you, right? So you're thinking, I'm in an ambulance, go to the hospital because I hurt my back. Wow. How is it possible that I'm having
nothing sexy about what's happening to me right now? Where are these coming from?
Right, what's happening to me? But but at that point, he had to like it, right? He hasn't been embarrassed yet.
Well, no, you'd be embarrassed in an ambulance.
I don't know.
If that's happening to you.
I guess, but it sure beats the pain of the slipped disc.
But it wouldn't be painful yet, I wouldn't think.
PSAS,
is a condition of unrelenting genital arousal and spasms, which is not necessarily sexual. And they have no idea when this is going to happen or how often, and can lead to intense suffering.
What's an average day like for this guy?
30, 40 a day. It's really hard to deal with.
30 or 40 a day.
Oh, my God.
Just 30
I can't believe we're hearing about non-sexual orgasms, by the way. That's a thing I had no idea existed.
That is weird, right? Sex with his wife, you asked, Bean?
It's possible to have sex with my wife. We don't very often because it becomes frustrating.
Yeah.
For her?
He doesn't continue, but I imagine for all women who are frustrated with guys that too quickly.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
And then you've got all that laundry to do and you have to repaint.
But if you hang in there, he could
maybe
come
wait. I mean, if he's having he's having 5.5 an hour, it seems like that there's something there for you.
Maybe. Right now he's in a therapist's office because he's trying to
Why are you laughing at this poor man?
Because he's in a therapist's office. Now you hear them talking to each other, and then in the middle of that, he ends up getting up and walking out of the room. But I'm laughing because I know what it sounds like.
Desperate for help, Dale has turned to therapist Diane London to see if she can shed light on the condition.
It's destroying every part of everything in my life.
When it comes to sexual issues, people get very... go ahead.
She says, go ahead. Gets up and walks out.
I've never seen anything like that before. There are no words.
Some words. Let's be honest, there are some words.
Can they not fix it? Do they not have any idea how to stop it?
They have no idea what causes it, so they don't really know how to fix it.
This is a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
Or the greatest
and I wish
thing
it on
ever.
Kevin. I wish it on Kevin.
Me
it's
too.
Either a nightmare or the greatest thing ever. Let's be honest.
Our security guard is in the studio with us, Charles. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, homie. What's going on?
I am a homie, aren't I?
Yeah, homie. I'm so a homie.
Charles used to play the drums for Little Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Not that that's what we're going to talk about, but it's a fascinating story, and you're writing a book about it. That's going to be pretty
cool. Writing a book, yeah, doing a lot of things. I'm working on a documentary about New Orleans musician.
Fantastic.
Doing a lot of things. Is that Lisa?
Yeah,
yeah.
Lisa, hey, I didn't recognize you with your clothes on.
Oh, look at that. Nice.
Charles, we talked about this.
You're not supposed to bring it up on the air.
Say anything.
Did you do it in the booth, in the security booth?
Because
that's pretty small.
Don't say anything.
Security booth? Did you do it there?
Child molester van.
Okay, lightning's van. Okay.
We didn't lightning's van.
Charles, when did K-Rock here in Southern California, when did the parking lot become a zoo? Because I know recently we had a snake.
And a big one.
A huge snake. And Jose took a machete to it and hit it. And it still crawled away.
Or it crawled away and it went in the back of the guard shack and it broke up in pieces and it's still wiggling.
Oh,
wiggling
like yes. It was just,
yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah.
We have feral cats, which are wild cats, and they're all over the parking lot. And stupid Scott Mason brings, he's our operations manager. I don't know what he does.
My boss.
He's your boss?
Well, yeah,
he's
my boss.
Blows. So he feeds them every day. When his car pulls up, all of these cats come out of the woodwork from all different corners of the parking lot. And then he feeds them, and then they go back to their miserable life of living in a parking lot. But any other cars pull in, they don't come up. They know his car.
Yeah.
So Scott leaves. He goes out of town frequently. And he makes you feed the cats?
I feed the cats every morning and sometime on the weekends, a Saturday or Sunday.
Charles, that's BS. You don't.
Well,
you
very know, nice of you,
you got to do what the boss said. You know what I'm talking
but
about.
But he's the boss in title only. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but you got to do it. But not on the cat. Man, y'all got to do something about these damn roaches. And roaches crawling my leg.
Roaches?
Up in here, roaches crawling my leg.
That's not
true. And if
you
bite me on my behind, it's going to be 9/11 for that sucker.
You have roaches crawling up your leg.
Right here, just now.
No.
Yeah.
We have fruit flies.
A big cockroach. Fruit fly.
Fruit fly infestation.
We have termites. Yep. We have spiders. Big spiders, man.
It's like the San Diego Zoo here.
What the hell?
I don't know.
I don't know what the hell. I'm waiting for a radio station or a zoo.
This is just nuts. So we brought Charles in, who, of course, is in charge.
Understood. He's there.
charge, too.
I love
Charles
you.
Charles in charge of our wrongs and our rights.
Okay, that's all I get. Now, Charles, tell us about the possum attack. What happened with the... Because now the possums, I guess... we're not making this up, either. All of these animals are in our parking lot.
This is true.
The possum now is attacking the... Not attacking the cats, but eating the cats' food... And the cats are too afraid to do anything about it, so they make a circle around the possum and just watch him eat.
Well, what happened was I was eating my oatmeal in the guard shack yesterday, and I'm just sitting down and enjoying my oatmeal and drinking my coffee. Damn possum came up there in the guard shack and looked at me, and I just like, boom, and he didn't run. I don't think that they fear humans,
you know? You tried to scare him off.
Yeah, and he just walked away. It looked like one of his ears was cut. Somebody probably was wearing one earring at one time.
Sure, yeah, and it got ripped off.
Trying to be hip, you know?
In a mean possum fight. did he hiss at you? I heard he hissed at you.
Oh, yeah, he did. He was like this.
He wanted Charles to go running so he could have the food.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he big?
Real big. Yeah.
Really?
He was beige and brown, and I have the cat food up in my guard shack.
That's what he wanted.
Yeah, I have a 20-pound bag of cat food in the guard shack.
That's what
and
he wanted.
He smelled it, you know?
He wanted it, so he was going to fight you for it.
He was going to fight me. That's
possums
right.
are mean, mother.
They are mean and everything. It's like lightning say. Lightning say that they're real mean, and they don't fear human beings.
Yeah, we pretty much weird. Now, when we leave K-Rock, we actually have to watch and watch and watch, and then Charles gives us the sign it's okay, and we have to sprint to our car. We have to run as fast as we can and get in our car immediately. Yeah, otherwise you get attacked.
That's right.
Well, Charles, I thought it might be nice to hash things out. Sometimes the two sides that are fighting, they don't necessarily get along, and sometimes you go to fighting before you need to, before you talk it out. Yeah. So we actually have the possum on the phone. And we're going to talk to him right now.
Okay.
Maybe you two can make up.
Yeah.
Right.
Find some common ground.
Communication.
Is this the possum here at
K-Rock? This is the possum.
Okay.
Give me some damn food. I want some goddamn food in here.
All right. But see, it's not for you. This is for the wild cats that we're keeping here.
Oh, I see. You feed wild cats, but you won't feed a wild possum.
Yeah.
You're kind of scary.
Possum, is you male or female?
I'm male, bitch. Don't start with me. I don't care. You drum for Little Richard, I'll kick your ass.
Oh, don't do that. Please, 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 Mr. Possum, don't do that. I'll teach you how to play drum.
I'm going to chew your damn leg off.
Now, were you staring him down? Is that really what happened? When
That's right.
He tried to scare you
I
off.
I came to guard booth. I said, give me that damn cat food.
Right.
And he said, get out of here. I said, no, I'm not getting out of here. I'm going to eat your goddamn security legs off.
Oh, man.
And then I'm going to beat you to death with them, and then I'm going to eat that cat food.
Wow.
Man, oh, man.
I'm not afraid no cats, no security guard, no nothing.
Yeah, you're a mean possum.
I am mean.
I'm going to stomp you the next time.
Yeah. I'll take you on, old man.
I'm going to bring you in the hood, sucker.
I'm going to crush you.
I'm going to bring you in the hood. I'm going to take care of you behind. I'm going to bring you in the hood and take care of you. I ain't afraid of you.
Oh,
you ain't bad.
You're
I'm the baddest
down.
Thing around here.
You're going
possum
down,
suck.
Old man.
This is going as well as we hope.
You possum, I'm going to bust. I'm going to go beside your head. You no good son of a gun.
Bring it on.
I'm going to bring it on, baby. I'm going to bring it on. Your little brother and your sister possum ain't going to recognize you when I get you. I'm going to stomp your head, sucker. I'm going to do it again, sucker. Don't forget. Come tomorrow. I'll be waiting for you. 7:30.
Possum,
I'm ready for you.
Possum, are you laughing?
No, I'm playing dead.
I think Lisa's a little distracted by all the dreamy men that just came into the studio right there in the traffic.
Yeah, my voice cracked.
blushing a little bit, looking around.
Hey, it's Foster and his people, ladies and gentlemen. Mark, Cubby, and Mark from Foster the People have joined us here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Good morning, boys.
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
What's going on? It's been a while since you stopped in to see us, I think.
It's been a minute.
Yep.
Couple minutes.
We're back.
I can't believe, and part of this is because your songs have remained in heavy rotation here at K-Rock. I can't believe it's been 3 years since your first album came out already.
I know. It's been a while. Feels weird that we have a record coming out in a week.
Mm. Does it? You wrote it on the road, right?
Yeah, we try. I mean, we got some writing done on the road, and then it took like a year to just really kind of dive in and spent a good amount of studio time kind of throughout all of last year just working on it.
You know, so much has been written since rock and roll began about how a musical act has its entire life to make its debut album, and then usually they've got to come up with a follow-up, you know, pull it out of their ass in a year or something like that. And it's a very different set of experiences because you've learned so much, A, about making a record, and B, about being a band because of all those hundreds of shows you did. I'm sure you went into this in a completely different mindset than making the first record.
The weirdest thing about the second record for me was just the thought that people were going to actually hear the music.
The first time around, who knew?
Yeah, the first time around, it was just kind of like, we're just making this for ourselves. Yeah.
So you made it before you toured at all.
Right.
Then you tour for 3 years, and now you're going to go in and make a second album. And do you picture yourself singing it on stage? Is that a thought process?
Yeah, I think because the first record was so electronic that, and I hadn't really thought about how we would play it live, that when it was time to play it live, I was like, oh my God, like, what melodies can we lose? Like, what do we need to keep and what can we lose? And so with this record, I think it was more intentional with kind of the songwriting process, thinking about, okay, well, when we play this live, you know, this is going to make sense. That we don't have like 10 synth parts going at once.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's something you have to factor into it because there's a lot of stuff you can do in the studio that then you're kind of hosed when you want to play live. Now, do you guys all take part in writing or no?
Yeah, this was definitely a more collaborative record than the first one, I think.
The first one you just ruled with an iron fist, right?
Yeah, it was like Putin.
let me hear from the people. Tell me what your thoughts are about the writing of this record, because I'm always fascinated about what you guys come up with for a second album in terms of what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it was a really fun process, actually. We were in a studio up in Malibu, kind of near Point Doom, and just kind of hunkered down in there and had all kinds of instruments set up and kind of felt like summer camp because we were living in the house and then the studio was out back and just had a lot of fun just, I don't know, rolling out of bed, cruising down to the studio and making noise all day. And
was it easy to concentrate? Because in that situation, it seems like, A, I would be wanting
to
go to
the
beach. And
yeah, there were a lot of
video games are always there.
Yeah, there were a lot of distractions. Me and Cubby went down to the beach a couple times and got some surf. Just take a little break of the day.
Nice. What do you guys think, maybe there's no answer to this, but are Foster the People songs about any kind of thing in particular, or are they just all over the place?
This record, I'd say, is really about kind of just, I guess, culture and just the evolution of culture. And I feel like specifically just kind of like the generation that we're living in now, just with social media and the inundation of technology and just kind of how that's affecting our day-to-day life, which I find to just be like a really fascinating topic.
Are you for it or against it?
I'm both, you know. I'm not like one or the other, but I did take kind of experimentally have like stepped back from all social media for, I guess, about 7 or 8 months now just to kind of test it. Because I feel like it's one of those things that we've just kind of automatically allowed into our lives, but not very many people are like saying, wait a second, maybe we should draw a boundary here. We've kind of always just said, you know, oh, it's good. Like new technology, new way to connect with so-and-so, like quicker, you know, whatever it is, like get grocery doors delivered to my door. Great. And we just kind of let everything in. But I don't know, for me, it's like we've been living thousands of years without it, but only 5 years with it. So I find
haven't those 5 years been better?
But you could say that about my DVR also, but I'm certainly not giving it up. I mean, there are some things that come along that do change your life, and you can't imagine ever living without them.
That's true.
How did you do for your 7 or 8 months that you tried to?
Good. I mean, yeah. You know, it's the most interesting thing. I don't know. For me, the most interesting byproduct of it was the second I got off Facebook and stopped tweeting, my life just got more peaceful. And that was a really interesting thing. I didn't think that would happen as a result, but like it was just like the static noise that I hadn't even been aware of, kind of just all around the in and outs of my life, it just kind of stopped, and I was just sitting in a room alone.
That's good for like 5 minutes, then I'm right back on Twitter.
Now, Mark, do you think that that's because of all the negativity on the internet that you can't avoid if you use social media?
Honestly, I think for me, it's just it was the fact that there was an open portal of communication, and any time that I was bored or wanted to connect to somebody or wanted to talk to somebody, I would just go and like send a tweet out, and then I would sit there and I would wait. And I would see, like, oh, okay, like, if I say something clever enough, then it's going to get retweeted, like, multiple right. times. And I just – I find that it's a really interesting thing in our culture that we're kind of using, like, that's validating our thoughts and, you know, our Instagram, how many friends we have, how many followers we have is validating our existence. And we're kind of – we're almost – you know, we have half an identity at home, and then half of our identity now is existing on the internet. And it's kind of this identity that we've created to, like, curate and show people – like what we want them to see, which is why we named the record Supermodel.
See, it all comes around, you guys. You're hearing the voices of the band Foster, the People here on the Kevin Bean Show. Their new record is called Supermodel. It does come out a week from today, next Tuesday, March 18th. They're going to be performing live for us here in a couple of minutes. You guys have a show coming up at the Fox Theater in Pomona. That one's sold out April 8th. Then you're playing Coachella. How are you feeling about that?
Good. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's we've played festivals all over the world now, and it's still probably our favorite. It's such a great place.
You're
really?
Going to be on both Saturdays, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you would rather play for people that you have to win over rather than play for a room full of people that you know are Foster People fans because they bought tickets to come see you.
There's something about Coachella. I feel like there's very few things that are more beautiful than magic hour at Coachella.
Yeah.
Like when the sun is setting at Coachella, not only does it seem like it lasts forever, but it's just kind of you're looking around and there's just kind of, I don't know, there's a certain look to kind of the golden haze at that festival that's just it's really energizing.
What if you have to play 1 hour before that when the sun is directly in your face?
That's brutal.
We've been there.
Foster the People is here. I wanted to ask, was it just you, Mark Foster, who went away, left the country for a few months in the process of writing this record, or did everybody go?
That was a solo, kind of a solo trip.
And you went to Morocco, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were gone for long enough that you started to think about what it's like to not live in America, and then you can look at America kind of through fresh eyes when you come back, right?
Yeah, it was a really crazy trip. It was the longest I've ever been out of the U.S. I think I was gone for probably 3.5 months total. And when I came back, I've never been culture shocked in my own home. That was the first time when I came back and I was culture shocked in L.A. Which was a really interesting thing. But that trip kind of fueled a lot of the concepts that ended up going into this record. Just seeing how other people live outside of Western culture and just how they communicate. And that was kind of what made me start really thinking about the social media thing, because I was in India and I was in Israel and I was in Africa and some places, you know, that are a little bit more desolate and their culture, they're communicating face to face still. And I just found that there was
losers.
Like... wait, they're not sitting around a table at dinner and everyone's on their phone?
Yeah, I mean,
I found myself at that dinner table before, and I go, I should pull my phone out and do something. I don't know. It seems like I'm the only one.
It was shocking to me many, many years ago when I first started traveling overseas to realize that America is not the focal point of the world that we think it is when we live here. Because we do think that everyone around the world is looking to America to see what we're up to. And you spend a couple of weeks or a couple of months like you did in a place like India, and you realize that America barely exists on their radar. It's so insignificant, with the exception of imported entertainment. That's the only time that they think of America is when they see a movie or hear a record.
Mm-hmm. Totally, man.
That's not a question, I don't think.
It was not a question.
I don't feel like that was a question.
But I guess I was just wondering if you kind of came to the same conclusion, which is, wow, it's a big, big world and we're only a slice of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it fueled a lot of ideas and thoughts. And I think, like, just, you know, it's just amazing to see. It's amazing for me to see their sense of community, their sense of what they love, how they communicate. I mean, in India in particular, like, that place is just, it really is, you know, it's so cliche for a musician to come back and say, India changed my life, you know, but it's like, it really is that type of a place where it's like, there's people, I went to villages where they really have nothing, but then there's, down the street, there's a temple made out of solid gold. And that's like a huge, that was just like the eye-opening thing where it's like these people dedicate their lives to what they believe. And there's like, there's a reverence to the way that they live their lives, which is very different from the way that we live our lives. They live for the greater of their community, as opposed to us living for the greater of self. as individuals. And so that was, I think, probably the biggest difference.
You may be too thoughtful for this show, Mark. Although I do love the dot on your forehead. I think that's an awesome one. So, Supermodel, next Tuesday is the new Foster the People record. It's coming out. There's all sorts of deals, by the way. You can pre-order if you want to go to Foster the People and find out all sorts of stuff. You're offering a bunch of different T-shirts and vinyl and instant downloads and everything. I mean, you guys have really thought this one through, it looks like.
We've got stuff.
They've got stuff. That's all you need to know.
We're streaming the record right now, too, on iTunes, so you can hear it in its entirety, I think.
Fantastic.
I don't know how many days, but
it's usually a week leading up to it, yeah. Mm.
That's it, to fosterthepeople.com. The guys are here, and as early as it is, they are going to attempt to perform live for us. Now, you guys are setting up acoustic, is that right?
We're going to play Coming of Age acoustically for you.
Can't wait. Looking forward to that. Foster the People right after this, live on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Foster the People in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show, bright and early on a Tuesday morning, 1 week ahead of Supermodel, the new album coming out. As the guys mentioned, you can stream it right now on their website, or excuse me, on iTunes right now. You can stream the new album, which is called Supermodel. This Coming of Age, you're about to play acoustic for us. Did you already tell us kind of what this one's all about, you guys?
Oh, this one...
Wait, you're asking if they told us this 15 minutes ago?
I don't remember if this is one of the songs they already described to us.
Okay.
No, we haven't.
Okay, good.
This was the last song that we wrote when we were in the studio, and it was kind of just about that moment when we got off the road touring Torches, or just kind of looked around and all the noise kind of cleared, and it's just kind of, I guess, a reflective time. There it is.
Here it is, actually. Foster the People live on K-Rock.
Nothing to say. Feels like it's coming. Feels
Bet you wish you wouldn't have written those super high notes for this morning.
That's awesome, you guys. Cubby's, that's you doing the background vocals there?
Cubby covers the lower vocals.
I'm sorry, nice. Bean, could I hear your impression of them again?
It's very Beach Boys. I just say, I was really impressed. That sounded great. That is Coming of Age Acoustic here on the Kevin and Bean Show on the World Famous Carrick. The band Foster the People is here. You can see them the Saturdays of Coachella, along with Muse and Queens of the Stone Age and Skrillex and Pharrell Williams. Do you guys, do you wander after your before or after your show and see a bunch of the other acts?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm looking forward to going for both weekends because Coachella is one of those things where it's like there's always two bands playing at the same time that you want to see.
Always, yeah.
And sometimes you're running back and forth, or I'll hear the first half here and then go there, hear the second half.
Yeah, right. You'll catch like 15 minutes here and whatever. So this time I'm going to kind of split it up, split it down the middle.
There you go.
Watch, you know, half and half.
We've got so many people to root for. I mentioned Muse and Queens of the Stone Age, but our friends at Cage the Elephant are playing on that Saturday, Capital Cities, Naked and Famous. I mean, it's really an awesome, awesome day. We got time if you guys want to try, you want to do another one for us here?
Yeah, tell us about this Pumped Up Kicks. What do we need to know about this song?
Yeah.
Or just play it.
Never heard of it.
Robert's got a quick hand. He'll look around the room. He won't tell you his plan. He's got a rolled cigarette hanging out his mouth. He's a cowboy kid. Yeah, he found a six-shooter gun in his dad's closet with a box of fun things. Now I don't even know what, but he's coming for you, yeah, he's coming for you. Saying, all the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, I'll run my gun. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullet. Daddy works a long day. He be coming home late, and he's coming home late, and he's bringing me a surprise. Dinner's in the kitchen and it's packed in ice. I've waited for a long time. Yeah, the slide of my hand is now a quick pull trigger. Reason with my cigarette, then say, oh, hair's on fire. Must have lost your wits, yeah. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, I'll run my gun. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullet. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, I'll run my gun. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullet. Kicks, you better run, I'll run my gun. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullet.
Come on.
Yeah.
Those guys who do that song are right here. How about that?
Doing that song.
Foster the People here in city with us on the Kevin and Bean Sean Carrick. That sounded great, you guys. Thank you for that.
Thanks, guys.
Seriously. So the album comes out next Tuesday. It's called Supermodel. And then what? You just hit the road for the rest of time?
For the rest of our lives. Pretty much. Yeah, we'll be gone. I mean, I guess off and on for the rest of the year. But first, Coachella kind of kicks it off. And that's like the beginning of our first U.S. tour.
Sure.
So.
Well, you can pre-order the album now at fosterthepeople.com. You can hear it streaming this week at iTunes, but definitely plan on buying it next Tuesday. Again, it is called Supermodel, and you guys are awesome. Thanks so much for coming by today. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us on the show.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q, and it's 9 minutes after 9 o'clock.
Hey, it's Friday on the Kevin and Bean Show. David Hasselhoff, out of another job. We'll tell you what's going on with him in about 15 minutes. First, though,
Yesterday I brought up on the show this story that is so fascinating to me, and I hope you guys were able to hear about it. These Cornell University doctorate students are working in the field of artificial intelligence for robots. And what they've done is they have this program where robots have conversations with people. And they memorize, record, and interpret thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of conversation. And the longer they do it, the more human-like their responses become. So you can actually have a conversation. You can sit down and talk to a robot, and he can understand what it is you're talking about and answer you back, right? So they thought it would be an interesting experiment to take two of these robots, program one of them to say hi to the other, and then just let the two robots go off and have their own conversation with no further human interaction. Am I explaining this sufficiently?
Yes. No. I'm sorry. What happened?
So here are two robots who have been given the voices of a man and a woman having a conversation from scratch, started with just hi. And I think it's so interesting to see where these guys go based on the input of thousands of hours of conversation. Listen up.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. You?
I'm okay.
That's good.
Are you good?
Yes, I am good. I just said I was.
No, you didn't.
Okay, now, to me, this is trouble that they're 12 seconds into the conversation and she's already breathing down his neck. Like, get off me.
Who did they use for the input? I mean, was it just a bunch of a-holes that they let you argue all day?
I think honestly, these programs talk to thousands of people. You know, I think it's an input of, you know, everybody that they speak with. But it is interesting to see the turn that, again, with no further human interaction, it's interesting to see where the robots go on their own.
I said I was.
So you are a robot?
No, my name is Cliverbot.
Yes, you are a robot and your name is Cliverbot.
I am a robot.
Yes, I know.
Together we are robots.
I'm not a robot. I'm a unicorn.
Okay, so
he's tripping balls. That robot's tripping balls.
My question is, whoever provided that conversation for that robot?
You know, we have nothing to worry about the robots because they're both just idiots. These robots are dumb. I mean, you did say he was good. She goes, no, you didn't. Yes, he did. So you're an idiot chick robot, and he says he's a unicorn, so he's a tripping balls idiot male robot.
Well, it is, let's be honest, it is, although funny and fascinating, it is artificial intelligence. It's not real intelligence yet. They've got a long way to go. But we were talking about this yesterday. I mean, we're very close to the point where you can have little robots who are running around in your house or something that you can tell to do something and they will do it and they will understand, they will answer back.
But I don't want to have a conversation with them.
Well, I mean, I think we've still got a ways to go, but I think this is the beginning of substitute people, which is what I've been hoping for.
Fewer real
people and more substitute people. I love where this is going. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think we've been able to communicate with computers and robots for some time now, humans to robot communication. We can ask them questions and they can respond and give us information and stuff. Right. What fascinates me about this story is that the two robots are interacting with each other. They don't even need humans to be in the middle of the deal. They are able to communicate with each other poorly, but to transfer information back and forth between two robots, I think is interesting. And we were inspired here in the show when you guys played this earlier in the week. We would like to have you guys replaced by robots. That's our plan. It would be much easier if Kevin and Bean were not the stars of the Kevin and Bean show any longer.
How would we be replaced by robots?
If we could get Kevin and Bean.
In fact, I just proved Ralph's point.
Now you know why we want robot hosts on the show, because we'd go, well, if we had two robots hosting the show, then
it would be flawless.
It would be easier for the rest of us. So what we did was we contacted the people at Cornell, and we gave them thousands and thousands of hours of Kevin and Bean on the Kevin and Bean show.
I see.
They programmed all that information into these robots, and we asked them to have a conversation between the robot Kevin and Bean and see how that would go. So they've done that for us, and they sent us the tape bag. This is the first time we're getting a chance to hear it. What would a robot Kevin and Bean conversation sound like?
You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. Kevin, I went to see the Taylor Swift concert last night. What? She is so good live. She played her song Mean and Mine. I was hoping for Moan. You are so creepy. I'm Bean. Aww. Why did you go see Taylor Swift? You are not so stinging. What? You know what I'm trying to say. I own many animals. They all have frivolous names, like Tater Tot. Ha, ha, ha. You should die. What? Why should I die? I did not say that. Yes, you just did. You are mistaken. Are you a long time? Do you watch all the time? Long time fan him? I love Rachel Nichols, and I believe she loves me as well, even though there is no reason to believe that. She's not going to want to come on our show pretty soon, come around time here. What? I have issues with my belly button. You are an idiot. I like soccer. It is good. What? Coming up next, we're for front and con turn beetle.
I can't wait for that show.
Oh, me too.
That show sounds good.